Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. We begin today with your chance through this weekend to have a direct say in how taxpayer dollars are spent in your neighborhood. The corruption indictment of New York City Councilmember Dan Halloran this week has reopened a debate about discretionary funds that city council members get to dole out more or less as they please in their districts. Halloran is accused of planning to use thousands of dollars of his discretionary money to reward people who gave him bribes. Now the mayoral hopefuls are debating whether discretionary funds should be abolished or just watch more carefully. But here's an alternative to the whole deal: participatory budgeting. A few members of city council are holding votes in their districts today through Sunday, in which constituents, basically anyone who lives there, can vote on how some public funds will be spent in their neighborhoods. For example, live in Melissa Mark Viverito's district in Manhattan. Her ballot includes installation of 6 free internet kiosks around the Upper West Side, free internet access around the neighborhood on Broadway, on Columbus, on Amsterdam, or anti-crime security cameras in the East River houses and other housing projects in her district, or playground renovation at PS 155. And those are just a few of the choices. Ironically, Dan Halloran is one of the council members participating. Despite his discretionary funds arrest, you can vote this weekend in his Eastern Queens district on whether some of his funds should go toward a better picnic area for Cunningham Park, improved median curbs on Union Turnpike, or a better technology at the Hollis Branch Library, among other things. But is all this really a good idea? Well, let's talk to two city council members taking part, Melissa Mark Viverito from parts of Upper Manhattan on both East and West Sides, whose ballot we just mentioned, and Brad Lander, who is also involved in spearheading the whole participatory budgeting idea. His district near Prospect Park includes parts of Park Slope, Kensington, Windsor Terrace, Carroll Gardens, Borough Park. Council members, thanks for coming on. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC.
Thank you.
And do we have Councilman Lander, or is he still getting to his office? I guess he'll join us in a minute. So, Councilwoman, how does this work? Oh. If I live in your district, how do I vote, and how do I know what my choices are?
This is the beauty of participatory budgeting. All of the items that you mentioned that are on the ballot are ideas that came out of brainstorming sessions from my district. These are community residents, constituents that got together at meetings throughout the district, and I also do represent a portion of the Bronx, so that's included as well.
Sorry.
That these ideas generated from. So, you know, hundreds of ideas came out of those brainstorming sessions. And then constituents themselves became budget delegates, and then they interacted with representatives from the different city agencies to go through and vet every project that was brainstormed to see which ones are viable based on the guidelines and the criteria of the city of New York. So it's a wonderful civic engagement. It gets people involved to understand government. They're coming up with the ideas of what the priorities are in the community. And then now we're in the process where people are voting. So we've been as of April 1st through April 7th, people will be voting. We have voting hours in our district offices. We have mobile sites at community centers, senior centers, at the park. We were in Jefferson Park yesterday with a mobile site where we engage the community and tell them to vote. And we've already picked up over 800 ballots. And people take the time. We've been stopping people on the street and telling them that they have the ability to now decide how to spend their taxpayer dollars. And people have responded overwhelmingly positive. It's a real wonderful process. We believe that we want it to grow and be more widespread, and we understand the cynicism that there is of government, but we're saying that this is the way to really re-engage, to have democracy be really fully implemented by allowing constituents and taxpayer dollars to really have a legitimate say in how their money should be spent.
And listeners, want to ask any questions about participatory budgeting as a concept or about items in your district? Electioneering welcome here. If you want to promote something, too, call it Participatory Media, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Councilman Lander, I know we have you now. I listed some of the things that are on the ballot as examples from Councilwoman Mark Viverito's district. Do you want to mention a few things that people in your Prospect Park area district can choose from?
Absolutely great. First, thanks to be with you. And, of course, we try not to advocate any particular projects because the whole idea is that people in the district have to decide, and you can go online to pbnyc.org or to our own websites and see them all. But I'm excited about a project at John Jay High School, a new digital media and filmmaking lab there, not just because the lab is great, but it's the first time those four schools have come together. It's one of those somewhat complicated situations of co-location across lines of race and class. And students from all four of those schools came together, took part in the process Melissa described, and proposed this project. And we let people vote who are 16 and older, so juniors and seniors can vote. So that's one I like. There's a project that would bring bus countdown clocks to bus stops across the district. This is something that people have been pushing for. So you know when the next bus was coming, and we've been pushing DOT and the MTA to do it. This is a chance for people to step up. We've got a bunch of school projects, a new film projector for Prospect Park, so at the Celebrate Brooklyn show, in addition to concerts, they could show movies, and some great pedestrian safety improvements as well to help keep people safer at different intersections throughout the district.
Now, before we take some calls, let me push back a little on the idea. Direct democracy sounds great in theory. The people rather than the polls with all their vested interests to vote on budget items. But couldn't this be even more undemocratic than when you decide, for example, Councilwoman, maybe the affluent plugged-in people on the Upper West Side are better organized and will turn out that vote for the free internet kiosks, while the people in the housing projects maybe aren't being mobilized as much to go out and vote for those security cameras, or the PS-155 parent community just isn't large enough to compete with some of the other groups to win those playground improvements. So does this vote really become a good measure of which projects are the most worthy, or simply more politics as usual, which interest groups are the most mobilized?
Well, first, I disagree with that premise, and I'll explain why. But, you know, when people present that, you almost feel like you can't win in the situation, right? We have people that are saying, oh, well, government is corrupt and all these politicians don't do anything. Then we're presenting an opportunity where directly people get involved and, oh, somehow there's criticism and that's not good enough. So you can't seem to win. This is really the process that does engage directly, mobilize. My district is a very challenging district in that I represent part of the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I represent East Harlem, and I represent part of the Mott Haven section of the Bronx. When we have the neighborhood assemblies, people from all across the district are coming together. So it's a level of engagement of people learning more thoroughly about their neighbors, learning about other communities that they may not have a direct interaction with, and hearing what their priorities are. So I was told a story about how I went to one of the neighborhood assemblies on the west side of the district, where we do have some areas that are a little bit more affluent than others, and a parent came to the neighborhood assembly already with a concept and idea, a member of a PTA of one of our schools, already with an idea of a project she wanted for her school. But when she sat across the table from people from public housing residents of Douglas Houses to hear about how some basic amenities, like their playground, the kids did not have a good playground, the basketball court was a mess, the playgrounds were really not in good shape, when she started hearing that that level of priority somehow assumed greater importance in her mind than what she came to the table with. So this is really an opportunity where when we have direct engagement and we challenge our constituents to like reach across their own neighborhoods and learn about their neighbors who they may not be interacting with on a consistent basis, but who live literally next door to them, and understand that those priorities are more important than what they came in with, people change their minds. And so we now see, you know, when people go to the ballot and they see, wow, you know, this public housing development needs cameras, or people are voting for those projects. So
Brian,
it does. Yes.
If I can, let me just give the example of last year's winning project in my district. Some horrible bathrooms at a relatively low-income school in the neighborhood, PS-124, not one of the ones that you might hear about. Their parents, no PTA member, had come to one of the neighborhood assemblies. It's not got a wealthy PTA. Volunteers from our delegate committees who helped put the ballot together and find the projects reached out to all the schools in the district that are low-income, found this project, and when it went on the ballot, it won in essentially a landslide, not because people from that school came out, but because people across the district, in exactly the way that Melissa describes, this project really calls out people's sense as stewards of our shared public realm. And I think really gets to that challenge. And there's understandably really low trust in government, and yet we're at a moment when we need government to be a place we can come together to confront issues like climate change, resiliency, gun violence. And we've seen this process be a space where people step up together to confront problems. And, you know, we hope this week more than 10,000 people across the city in the 8 districts that are doing it, and we'd love to give credit in a minute to our other colleagues who are doing it too, so people know where they can vote, are coming together to act as those stewards of the public realm.
When
together.
You referred to that school bathroom as the winning project in your district last year, out of all these choices on the ballot, and it's not just two or three, there's a whole bunch of them in each district, is there only one winner?
No. So there were 7 last year in my district. That just happened to be the top vote-getter of the 7 that got funded out of 20.
All right.
Right, because we put in $1 million of capital funds, minimum, $1 million, and then we fund the projects that get the most votes up to the $1 million. So in my case, I think it was 6 projects that got funded in my district, ranging from security cameras of public housing developments to an imaging machine for a public hospital to a mobile van to deliver meals to seniors in their homes. So it runs the gamut, but we basically keep funding the projects that get the most votes up to the $1 million. If I could just say also just in terms of my district, one of the beauties this year that we've seen is a level of engagement of young people. We had youth assemblies specifically geared at our young people. They've become budget delegates. They're out there really mobilizing the community. We have formerly incarcerated young people that are participating as well and members of our community. We have seniors working with young people on promoting technology upgrades at their centers. You know, so it's really a wonderful, wonderful process that truly engages our community and empowers members that historically have been disenfranchised. The fact that we also not only 16 years and older can vote, people whether they're documented or not, any member of our community who lives in our community has the ability to voice what their priorities are and what their concerns are, and it's being validated through this process.
All right, it's direct democracy in New York City this weekend. If you're just joining us, the polls are open now through Sunday in 8 of the city's 51 city council districts, and we'll go over the list in a minute for funding items that are actually on the ballot that you can choose from. Direct democracy, what our guests call participatory budgeting, 2 of the city council members participating with us, Brad Lander from parts of Brooklyn and Melissa Mark Viverito from parts of Manhattan and the Bronx. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Bob in Jackson Heights, you're on the air. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call, Brian. I think you got it exactly right, that with participatory budgeting, the people who will really get screwed are immigrant groups, people who are not registered to vote, people on the fringes in every neighborhood. Those who are not directly involved in the political process will really feel will really be pushed out. In Jackson Heights, the people who are most involved in civic are the civic groups, and all the civic groups in this neighborhood are funded by the local councilmen. So of course they're going to be in there with their sleeves rolled up. But the Bangladeshi Muslims don't get anything in this neighborhood, and they will get less than nothing if this goes through.
So, Councilman Lander and Bob, thank you. What about that circular flow of power that he was referred to, of the most organized and funded groups getting money from the council member?
It's a great question, and we really worried about it, but I'm so pleased to say that the results work out to be the opposite of it. I actually represent a community of Bangladeshi Muslims in Kensington, in my district, and they came out last year in numbers double what they have come out with historically in regular elections, even though there aren't substantial civic groups there. And that was true throughout the city, actually. There was a research group, the Community Development Project of the Urban Justice Center, did an extensive research project on participation in the neighborhood assemblies as delegates and as voters, and people of color, low-income groups, immigrants, and folks who are sort of traditionally disenfranchised were much more likely to participate in this process. Now, we put a lot of energy into that because, like Bob, we really were concerned about it. But it's not run through traditional or existing civic groups. Everyone's welcome to come to the table, but people come as equals. We do outreach in many languages. We try to identify people in communities to help with that outreach. Our partners at Community Voices Heard and the Participatory Budgeting Project help us put folks on the ground. And I can just say you can go look at that research report, which is on the pbnyc.org website. This has brought people into the process.
And Councilwoman, he mentioned the term voter registration. What if you're not registered? Do you have to be registered in the usual voter registration system to participate this weekend?
No. This all you have to demonstrate is that is that you live in the district. 16 years of age and over, so already you're talking about youth, that you know you have to be registered at 18 or vote at 18 here, so you're already talking about incorporating a group of people that aren't registered, and undocumented, right, members of our community who are going, their children are going to our public schools, they're using our, you know, our playgrounds, they're members of our community, they can, all you have to do is demonstrate that you live in the neighborhood.
So you have to bring what to the polls, like a utility bill or something?
Or we have affidavits where you can just demonstrate that, you know, you're committing or saying that you are, you know, yes, I'm a member of the community, but anything that you have. It could be a cell phone bill, a utility bill, anything that you have that just demonstrates that you're a member of the community.
All right. We're just about out of time. Do you want to run down, Brad Lander, that list of the eight? And it's only eight out of the 51 city council districts. So tell people where they can vote.
Yeah, that's great. In Brooklyn, if you live in David Greenfield's district, the 44th, Borough Park, Bensonhurst, Councilmember Jumaane Williams' district in East Flatbush, Steve Levin, which runs from Greenpoint through Borum Hill and Park Slope, or mine. In Queens, Eric Ulrich, Mark Weprin, and as you mentioned, Dan Halloran. What a horrible thing if those allegations are true. Big betrayal of the public trust, but what good news that voters there won't be disenfranchised. They can say what they want to see in District 19 in Queens.
Is that from the same pot of money, by the way, this discretionary funding or member items, so-called, is that what people are voting from? So
that is correct.
So when mayoral candidates like Bill de Blasio say, do away with all discretionary funding, do away with all these member items, Council Speaker Quinn is on the other side of that and says, no, we need to keep the system clean, but we should have this. If they were to do away with it, that would end participatory budgeting?
As we do it in New York City, yes. There are places around the country where they do participatory budgeting with citywide budget lines, but in New York and in most places, it's done with discretionary items because that's what gets to the ground for local projects.
So does that land the two of you clearly on the de Blasio side of that question, which you could say without endorsing any mayoral hopefuls?
I believe we should maintain discretionary funding, but with more participation, more transparency, more inclusion, take the politics out of it, but enable it to let people act as stewards of our shared public realm in their neighborhoods.
I should have said, does that land you on the Quinn side, to be accurate in my question, because that's to keep the participatory budgeting or the member items and keep it clean. Councilwoman?
Well, what we're saying is also, you know, in the mayoral forum that happened in Brooklyn, the question was raised about you implementing some type of participatory models. Obviously, this is taking hold. All candidates said yes. And the last thing I could say is also we are being looked at as New York City, and we're influencing other areas to also implement this process. I have the mayor of San Juan is actually visiting my district this weekend to see this model in action. She'll be part of our celebration, and she has already committed to implementing participatory budgeting. She's a newly elected mayor in San Juan in Puerto Rico. So it's also a process that is influencing other areas and other cities as well. So it's really a wonderful way of really validating the voice of our community.
And Brad Lander, did we finish the list? Did you get through all the districts?
That's all eight, but let me point people to the website, pbnyc.org, because you can not only see the districts, you can find voting times and locations, you can see the ballots and all the projects.
Voting for funding for projects in eight city council districts in New York City. Two of the participants, City Council Member Melissa Mark Viverito from parts of Manhattan and the Bronx, City Council Member Brad Lander from Brooklyn. Thank you both very much for coming on and talking this through with us.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Thanks.